Are Wisconsin voters so partisan that their political views color even how they see the state of the economy? New reporting by Craig Gilbert of our Washington Bureau seems to show that. We'll chat with Craig about what he's finding. Meantime, dozens of Wisconsin dairy farms could shut the barn door unless federal trade officials act to intervene in a heated trade dispute with Canadian farmers. We'll have the latest from Mary Spicuzza reporting this week from Madison, and Bill Glauber and Dan Bice reporting from our Milwaukee studio. All that and more from Wisconsin's best political team today on Politics. Welcome to On Politics for Thursday, April 13th. I'm David Haynes, the opinions editor at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Well, Craig Gilbert has been doing some reporting on how people in Wisconsin view the economy, and he's finding some interesting things. We talked to Craig just moments ago. So, Craig, you've been doing some reporting on how views of the economy seem to be shaped through a partisan lens, and you've been looking at the Marquette University Law School poll results. What are you finding?
Well, the first thing is, and this is not a shock, is that the outlook people have toward the economy is heavily dictated by their political party. And we saw kind of a revolution in how people answered this question from before the election in October, when Barack Obama was still president. And Republicans, for example, had a very dark outlook about the economy, and Democrats had a much brighter one. And then that completely flipped when Marquette Law School asked the same question last month, and Republicans went from being pretty pessimistic to being, you know, rosy-eyed optimists, and the exact opposite occurred with Democrats. And the only real change that occurred was obviously a different president in the White House.
Right. And of course, Wall Street has reacted favorably to Trump, but the economic signals we've been getting generally are kind of where they've been, you know, decent.
And it's not only, here's the most interesting part to me, is it's not only people's expectations about the future of the economy that are dictated by this partisan filter, but it's the judgments they make about how the economy has performed, even in the past. I mean, when they ask in October, when they asked Republican voters in Wisconsin, you know, how do you think the economy has been doing over the last year? They were very negative. But just a few months later, when the presidency has changed hands, they're incredibly positive about the past performance of the economy. So it's kind of like, it's not just your mood, but it's also your version of reality that changes. And the interesting thing is, when you look at this polling over a five-year period, the patterns in how Democrats and Republicans answer this question completely changed depending on the political context. You know, when it's a presidential election season and the person in power is a Democrat, Barack Obama, you know, Republicans get more and more negative and Democrats get more and more positive about the economy. But when it's a gubernatorial election, like the recall election in 2012 and the 2014 gubernatorial election, and the incumbent in question is Scott Walker, who's telling a positive story about the economy, it's just the reverse. I mean, Democrats get more negative about the economy and Republicans get more positive.
So it goes both ways. Let me ask you a question on a slightly different topic. This week, Donald Trump appeared to back away from a couple of positions that he's had. He seemed to be cozying up to Russia. Now he is questioning Vladimir Putin. He seemed to be in Steve Bannon's camp. Now he's questioning Steve Bannon. And on a whole range of issues, it's hard to tell exactly where he's at. My question to you, though, is for people like Paul Ryan and others in the congressional delegation, does that make it harder to sort of understand where he's coming from and to support his initiatives?
Well, I think it's a mixed bag, because in some cases it does make it harder when the president's not taking a consistent position. But in some cases, he's actually moving toward, congressional Republicans on some of these issues. I mean, the one issue where he's been most, where he's had the most distance with Republicans in Congress has arguably been Russia, and they've been much more negative about Russia than he's been. So, in effect, he's kind of getting closer to Republicans in Congress on Russia, presuming that there's not more shifts in store. So I think it depends on which direction he's moving in. I do think it's a challenge for members of his own party overall, because you know, they don't know necessarily whether the positions Donald Trump took during the campaign are going to be the same positions he's going to be taking going forward. And that is one reason among several why Republicans are very cautious about reacting to what's coming out of the White House, not only because they don't want to be, it's awkward for them to be critical, but because they know that what they're hearing from the White House could change.
Right. Well, Craig, thanks so much. Look for Craig Gilbert's reports this weekend at JS Online and in the print edition of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Craig, thanks so much.
Jay, until next time.
So back in Wisconsin, there's been this fight between dairy farmers here and in Canada. The two U.S. senators have gotten involved, as have local officials in both Wisconsin and in New York State. I talked to Rick Barrett, who's been reporting on this from Appleton this week. So I'm joined now by Rick Barrett. Rick's a reporter on our business staff. He's reporting out of Appleton today. And Rick, you've been reporting on this trade dispute between Wisconsin farmers and the Canadians. What exactly is happening there, and what's the latest?
Yes, hi. Good morning, Dave. What's happened here is about 75 Wisconsin dairy farms, and there could be more, have lost their milk contract. And what that means is they no longer have a place to sell their milk as of May 1st. And the reason they've lost that contract is the processor, Grassland Dairy Products, been buying their milk, lost its business with Canada.
And that's because the Canadians have changed the rules there, right?
In effect, they have. The Canadians have changed their policies a bit, implementing a new class of milk products, which makes it more, let me put it this way, it incentivizes the Canadian companies to buy Canadian domestic milk rather than milk from Wisconsin or Michigan or New York or somewhere else in the U.S. makes it cheaper them to buy Canadian milk.
Exactly. And so they put in place some rules that tend to favor their milk producers. Now, the Wisconsin producers and, in fact, our senators are arguing that they are in perhaps violation of a trade agreement, correct?
Yeah, that's right. Our congressional delegation and our governor and a lot of the folks in the U.S. dairy industry are saying, hey, it's not fair. You know, basically what you've done is you've tinkered with the milk price in Canada in order to shut Wisconsin and Michigan and New York and other U.S. states out of the Canadian market.
So what are the senators, and Tammy Baldwin signed this letter along with Chuck Schumer and Kirsten Gillibrand in New York, what are they asking the federal government to do?
They're asking for the federal government to get in touch with Canada and say, we want to go back, you know, to the way things were. They're asking the Trump administration to get involved. They're asking our U.S. trade rep to get involved, our Commerce Department. And they're saying, let's get involved here and see if this is a violation of NAFTA or if it's a violation of the WTO or if it's a violation of any of the agreements we have in place.
And at the same time, the state regulators, both in Wisconsin and New York, are asking the USDA to get involved as well. What do they want the Ag Department to do?
Pretty much the same thing, Dave. They're asking the Ag Department, as well as the other federal agencies, to look at this closely and say, is this a violation of our trade agreements with Canada?
And are they also asking for USDA to buy up surplus milk and cheese? And how would that help? How would that help these 75 dairy farmers if they did that?
It's been talked about, Dave, and it's one possibility. You know, USDA has done this before where they've come in and bought up massive amounts of cheese or other dairy products in order to help the market a little bit for these farmers. But in this case, logistically, it'd be very difficult, if not impossible. How do you buy milk from 75 farms exclusively and not buy it from all the farms in the rest of the country? It could be very problematic to set something like that up. It is being talked about, though.
All right. Well, Rick Barrett, reporting today from Appleton, thank you for that. And look for Rick's report at JS Online and also in the print edition of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Rick, thanks so much.
Okay, thank you, Dave.
So now we're going to turn to the ongoing drama in Madison over the state budget. There was a blow-up last week between two longtime allies, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and the governor, Scott Walker. We turn to Mary Spacuzza now, who's reporting from Madison today, to discuss that. So now I'm joined by Mary Spacuzza. Mary's over in our Madison Bureau today. Mary, welcome.
Thank you.
You bet. So there was this text message flap last Friday between Governor Walker and the Assembly Speaker, Robin Voss. What happened there, and have they kissed and made up?
Yeah, so it was interesting. This broke last Friday. Our colleagues, Jason Stein, Patrick Marley, got text messages that got pretty heated between these longtime allies. Obviously, they've been very closely working together in the legislature. So it's interesting to see them kind of at each other's throats over the state budget. And they were fighting over basically, you know, obviously transportation is a very heated issue and one where they have not seen eye to eye. So it got pretty heated. There was talk of like, we're not just here to rubber stamp your budget. Walker feeling like some of his past proposals had not been, had kind of gotten trashed by the legislature. So it was an interesting window into people who have at times been really more at lockstep with each other. But they did seem to kind of hug it out and had a meeting between the two of them, and we're waiting to get details of what they talked about in that meeting. But Walker today, while he was up in Nina, hinted to one of our colleagues there, Madeline Baer, that there's going to be some good news coming out on transportation with a new projection that they may have some more money to deal with, which maybe will even help them get along better.
Yeah, it might lead to a compromise. Transportation has been a really divisive issue. Voss, at one point in the last few days, has said, no, let's not rebuild, at least for now, the east-west freeway in Milwaukee between downtown and the zoo interchange, and let's instead rebuild this section of freeway that coincidentally goes through my district south of the city.
Right.
And
they obviously, even going back, you know, years, they've fought over whether they should explore issues like toll roads or whether there should be more revenue or some kind of, you know, gas tax increase. Obviously, Walker has really not been a fan of things that would generate more revenue because he doesn't want to have any new taxes.
Right. So that debate will be ongoing. Mary Spacuzza, we appreciate your reporting there today from Madison. And look
Thanks.
For Mary's
I'll keep
reports.
You posted.
Look for Mary's reports in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. So now I'm joined in the Milwaukee studio by Bill Glauber, reporter for the Journal Sentinel, and Dan Bias, a columnist for the Journal Sentinel. And we're going to go to our winners and losers.
That time of the week.
That time of the week, and we have an extra
Before
special.
Before we go on,
on this
I mean, it is, that I was just going to make mention of what she was talking about, the text messages.
Yeah.
What? First of all, I'm wondering, do you think the governor, who loves to send texts, and Robin Voss, who loves to send texts, will they keep this up now that people have found out you could get these things? And then secondly, how did they get these things so easily? I'm used to open records requests taking weeks. This looked like it came out in hours.
And you wonder, are they going to use Snapchat, and will the messages disappear, and will Snapchat be suffered
subject
to FOIA?
Do you want a governor using Snapchat? I don't know. So winners and losers.
Do you think that Voss and or Walker didn't realize that text messages are public records?
I've done interviews with Voss via text message and agreed to use quotes and stuff from him. Asked him questions, said this is on the record, asked him, chatted with him. So I think he probably knows. But
you know, the serious part of this, you know, when Walker's unsuccessful presidential campaign, when he basically left the job of being governor to go run for president, I think this is, you know, this is still a sore subject in Madison among some people.
Well,
I think a lot of
people felt like he had abandoned the legislature and the legislature had to do its own work. Everybody on the record and officially was saying, it's not a problem. This is what we knew he was going to do this. But behind the scenes, a number of people were frustrated by that. And it also meant more work for the Republican leadership.
Right. And there are some, as Mary pointed out, some real differences in policy between Walker and
transportation.
Transportation is the big thing. Roads, how are you going to pay for them? Gas tax, some other fee, or no taxes, which is what Walker is saying.
Okay. Winners and losers. Dan, why don't you go first? Who's your winner?
My winner is Paul Ryan, even though his numbers are in the tank nationally and he's had, swung and miss on health care. People still want to give him money, and he's raised a lot of money, and right now he has $9.4 million in the bank. So
just in his congressional account, doesn't even count the PAC. He's been funneling money, millions of dollars, to other Republican candidates. That's what the House Speaker does. He does fundraising, not just for himself, but for the party at large.
It's an important part of his job, and he's been effective at it for the first quarter of this year.
And anybody who wants to take Ryan on, which I don't think there's going to be anybody who really wants to take him on, you're looking at $9.4 million with
it's
a year and
way
a half
more.
To go.
Yeah, it's going to be way more than that.
Could he convert that to a presidential campaign fund at some point?
I don't know the rules on that. I know the rules about switching between federal and state, but I don't know if you can you could switch that. But I don't think he's thinking about running for president right now. I think right now we're sort of in survival mode. And trying to manage and get to the next thing. I don't think. Yeah.
All right. Speaking of survival mode, my loser is
Sean Spicer, who had another bad week. This one regarding whether Hitler used chemical weapons or not. As I think it was Jimmy Kimmel who said that he's the first press secretary who might need a press secretary. not a good week for him.
And Bill, who's your loser?
Loser is this game outfit, Cards Against Humanity. It was a potato stunt gone awry. They wanted to ship all these potatoes to Ron Johnson, the U.S. senator, to have a town hall meeting. The Johnson staff intervened, picked up the potatoes, some 2,000 of them, at the post office, and they're now donated to food banks. And Johnson said, the people would be better off, instead of the $5 to send these potatoes, they would have been better off sending $5 to food banks.
People are frustrated, though, with Ron Johnson for not having a town hall meeting in this area. I've been stopped several times in public with people saying, can you get Ron Johnson to have some sort of town hall meeting where he'll be present in the Milwaukee area? And I'm like, I don't have that in. But
I don't see Tammy Baldwin holding any town hall meetings either.
That's true.
And, basically, the one guy you have to give a lot of credit to, whether you agree or disagree with him, Jim Sensenbrenner, does him day after day, week after week, year after year. He's still doing him. The crowd tries to get under his skin, and he's not taking the bait.
He's in the Firefly room at the Tulsa Public Library like once every 3 months. So, yeah, he's there.
All right. And who's your winner?
I have a winner. It's an easy one. The Milwaukee Bucks. Yeah. They made the playoffs. They advanced to the playoffs. They play Toronto. The other thing going on with the Bucks is the arena, because of the relatively nice weather in the winter, is on time. And so things are looking up for the Milwaukee Bucks. What, 3-4 years ago, we never would have said that. But this seems to be a resurgent, revived franchise.
And then this team could cause some trouble.
Cause trouble, but who knows? At least
Toronto gets skittish in the playoffs. That's the one edge that they have.
Yeah. So, all right. And Dan, I think we have one extra loser.
There's so many losers this week. I mean, I mentioned the Hitler thing. What's the North Carolina politician who was likening Abraham Lincoln to Hitler? You've got that. But I think the biggest loser probably this week is United Airlines and how they handled removing the doctor from the Louisville area from the plane, showing us just what we expect about customer relations from major airlines.
From major airlines,
They just keep burying, they just keep digging themselves into a hole. And the attorney for the person who was dragged off gave a pretty lengthy news conference today in Chicago. The gentleman who was pulled off, his daughter also appeared, and it was another dreadful day for United Airlines.
Well, your instinct usually in a situation like that is to apologize, but that was not their instinct.
No,
my sense is their instinct is going to be to pay. Pay is going to be a lot of money.
It's already started. Yeah. They paid, they covered the airfare for everyone on that flight down to Louisville that night, for starters. And now
it will be a case study of how not to do things. I think it goes right up there with New Coke. I mean, I really think this is going to be one of these things people study for a very long time.
Yeah. Well, let's take a reader question. This is from Frank on Second Shift.
Okay.
Wants to know.
Aren't we all?
Aren't we all? We're on three shifts here at the Journal Sentinel. Many members of Congress from both parties, he states, would like a bipartisan committee to investigate the actions of Susan Rice, formerly of the Obama administration. And he wants to know, so what would be the difference between that sort of investigation and a formal Senate investigation?
Well, I think what there is, you know, I think all of this just has to do with Russia. Did Russia interfere with the election? And was, you know, who were these Trump people who were unmasked? You know, Susan Rice wanted, who did it? Susan Rice was reading reports, apparently wanted to know, you know, who were they talking about? I think it all will go ultimately to the Senate Intelligence Committee that really is the only bipartisan forum right now that is working in Washington. And, you know, it'll go into the mix with everything else, and there's a lot to it. And, you know, I would suggest to people to, you know, it's the investigation or the news leaks are moving at Twitter and warp speed, but an investigation moves much slower, and you have to wait to see. But this is going to be lengthy. And it may not be all that good for the administration
right.
in the end.
So the question is that there are a lot of bipartisan support for doing this with Susan Rice. Is that actually
I
true?
I have not heard that.
No. I mean, essentially, it'll be the Senate Intelligence Committee.
No, right now, it's Republicans who are pushing for this. I've not heard any Democrats say, yes, we want you to pursue this.
There is some bipartisan support for the Russia investigation,
generally. Right. Yeah, I was just saying that.
Not the Susan Rice.
I think Frank didn't get enough sleep last night, so I just wanted to check on that.
All right, so one more question, and this one involves Rick Barrett's story on this trade dispute between Canada and Wisconsin and our Wisconsin dairy farmers. And there's several questions here, but I'll just choose one of them. Does the Canadian government want to pursue basically a Canada First program, much like Trump is talking about America First in terms of this milk issue? And I mean, I think the question is, or the answer is, the Canadians are looking out for their own producers. That's sort of what they
do. Just as the United States is.
Yeah.
And I mean, especially with agriculture, you know, this goes across, you know, North America, goes across Europe, where all the national governments are looking out for their own. And I think that's what's occurring here.
And you know, it had been a core tenet of Republican politics that free trade agreements should be in place, but obviously Donald Trump has changed all that. So this notion of protectionism is under debate and under discussion right now, and I think that's part of the reason we're having this discussion.
Yeah, well, he's changed his mind on a few things already this week. So
just
this week. All right, and that's our edition of On Politics for this week with Craig Gilbert, Rick Barrett, Mary Spokusa, and Madison and Dan Bison, Bill Glauber in Milwaukee. I'm David Haynes for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Thanks for joining us.